here's what we want to do when conflict arises between us, so that you're really setting the foundation for a community that communicates regularly, so that when difficult conversations come up, you have the structure and the space to have those conversations. They don't come out of nowhere. They come out of the whole foundation of, this is what we do here. We talk about the small stuff, and we talk about the big stuff, and we talk about the hard stuff, and we talk about the easy stuff. But the main thing is that we talk.
What would the world look like if people felt like they mattered? Welcome to the Lead with Love podcast, exploring what it means to lead with love in business and life. I'm your host, Jada Selner, and in this show, I'll share meaningful conversations to help you, the creative, the entrepreneur, the world changer, reach more people, go after your dreams, and serve your community with love. I appreciate you joining me. Now, let's get cozy and start today's episode. As a leader, how do you commit to having hard, uncomfortable, sometimes we want to hide and avoid conversations that will actually deepen connection and trust within your company and your home? If you want an environment that is safe for communication, creativity, and problem solving, along with the giving and receiving of constructive feedback, whether at work or with your family, then this episode is for you. In today's conversation, I get cozy with Lynn Maureen Hurdle. Now, Lynn is an executive coach, communication expert, and conflict resolution strategist. She's also a facilitator, speaker, and author with over 35 years of experience in blending the connection between communication, conflict, and culture into a unique style of engagement for leaders. And I super geek out on this conversation. Lynn is also the author of the bestseller book, Closing Conflict for Leaders, How to Be a Bold Leader and Develop a Kick-Ass, High-Functioning, Happy AF Team. She also teaches leaders the skills to engage skillfully, confidently, and powerfully in everything from daily conversations to the most difficult conflict situations. And she shares one thing that we need to reframe when we are having tough conversations with other people. She also passionately writes about breaking culture, conflict, and cultural breakthroughs for Psychology Today. She has delivered her unique trainings, workshops, and deep coaching to leaders from Harlem to Hong Kong and from the South Bronx to South Africa. I am so excited for you to meet this phenomenal woman leader. Let's get cozy with Lynn. Hello, hello, Lynn.
Hello, hello.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you today. And, you know, before we started recording, I was like, what part of the world are you in right now? And you are in?
I am in the Bronx, New York.
Awesome. And you live a bi-coastal life, right?
I do. I live a bi-coastal life. It's a dream come true. Yes.
Yeah. So in California is your other home away from home.
It is. Southern California is my home away from my Bronx home, becoming more my home, though.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, I love both energies of, like, there's something about New York that's very gritty. Everyone's moving, but there's also this sense of connection. Like, people are always willing to meet up on the East Coast. You know, it's like easy to get around on a train, or even if there's all the traffic and no movement on the streets, it's just, there's something that's like easy to get around. Or in California, there is more nature and space and openness that gets you like creatively inspired and you just feel healthier. But everyone tends to like be in their bubble, you know, like it's a little bit harder, like get people out of their houses. But I've actually personally been working really hard to like reach out to people, girls' night in, play tennis, go dancing. Like we have to get out of that rut of being in isolation and actually connect with other humans.
I love that. It's so funny because I actually made that connection for myself that every time I come back to New York, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make sure I see people that I don't always see. And just going out with them and sitting down and having conversations, because I'll hop on the train in a minute. I am definitely a New Yorker. I love the subway because it can get me anywhere, anytime. And so I try to do that when I'm here.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And the way that we first met was through Jennifer Kim, who's a good friend of mine. We've been at many of her events that she's hosted. I'm actually getting ready to go to one of her events soon. And it's been just like an honor to get to know about your body of work around transformational conflict resolution. So I'm super excited to dive into this conversation in a deeper way with you.
Me too.
Yes. So I'm curious, you know, your body of work around transformational conflict resolution, and you're known as the conflict closer. So what inspired you to start this work?
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you, it was inspirational because I absolutely, from the time I was 3 years old, fell in love with the performing arts. So from three on up, I danced, I sang, I acted, I wrote plays and television shows and poems. And I absolutely knew that when I went to college, I was going to go most likely for acting. That was what I loved the most, but I was good at all of it. And so I had my life mapped out because, of course, I was then going to be a star. So I'm ready to be all of this. And I had gotten accepted to Syracuse University's theater program, was a pretty prestigious theater program. And I am coming home from my high school. My high school's in Manhattan, so I take a train and a bus. I'm on the bus about a mile away from my home. And here I am, I'm 17 years old, and we're at this bus stop. And I'm thinking, we're not moving for a while. What's going on? So I look, the door is closed, and I see ahead of me about 50 young white males in bandanas running toward the bus with baseball bats in their hands. And I realize that it's myself, another teenager, and the bus driver, who are the only Black people on the bus. The bus is crowded, and I'm thinking, we're in trouble. And they surround the bus. They're trying to get the Black people off, using the N-word, swinging the bats, and the bus driver won't open the door, so they try to push the bus over. And the only thing that stopped them is that on the other side of the street was another bus packed with Black kids from a high school somewhere along the way. And so they ran over there, and I got off the bus, and this young man was terrified because he literally had just moved into the neighborhood a week ago. And so he had no clue how to get himself home from where we were. And I took him home. So I had lived in that neighborhood then from the time I was seven. So I knew the neighborhood well enough. And when I dropped him off and I was on my way home, I clearly remember a voice in my head saying, I don't know how, but I know my purpose is to do something about bringing people together to resolve this. And I thought, no, I'm going to be a star. Where is this message coming from? And sure enough, when I got to Syracuse, I did my first 2 years in the theater department, and they opened a new major, and it was called Nonviolent Conflict and Change. And I switched to that major, and I have been in love with the work ever since then, but I do know that it's work that I was supposed to do.
Wow. It's so powerful how a moment can transform us and then transport us into another direction, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, your love for the theater and arts, like you're like, nope, I'm on this path. I am on this path.
That's right.
And then like a whole program and major is created in the school that you're in, you know? So how, and I'm sure that there, I'm curious how you've blended your love for performing arts and expression and creativity in that nonviolent communication and change.
Yeah, thank you. See that? That's so funny because people actually don't make that connection to me right away. And in fact, when my first year in the coursework of nonviolent conflict and change, we had to study the civil rights movement. And so I chose to come in and portray my character as opposed to just simply read a report about my character. So I had the costume and I'm doing this whole monologue. And so my professor says, you're in the wrong major. You are really good. You should be in theater. And I said, well, I was, but here I am here studying this. And as a result, I just work it in to everything that I do. So if I'm coaching, my clients can expect, hey, that conflict, that conversation that you're going to have, that difficult one, we're going to role play it before you actually go out there and have it with that person. And if I'm in a workshop, I'm delivering a workshop, we're definitely going to do role plays, or I'm definitely going to have you deliver a monologue about what it is that you want to say to this person that maybe you haven't spoken to in years or that you've really been angry with. So I really do work it in so that not only do I get to express the way I want to, but people get an opportunity to play things out in real life. Because I can teach you a skill or several skills. We can talk about what's going on, and then you can say, oh, yes, I will do this or I will try it. But when I give you the opportunity to actually role play it out, you realize, oh, my goodness, this is going to be a hard conversation. I'm so glad that I practiced it here.
Yeah, I love that invitation to embody a hard conversation, you know, in a safe place, that there's some psychological safety around it. Because when we are having conflict with someone and we are having a hard conversation, our bodies, like, they freeze up. They, you know, there's this like, I cannot compute, cannot talk. And so to really feel into that conversation, which, like, in the performance arts, it's very embodied. And I think the arts are very healing too. Like, we can see a lot of conflict being highlighted that is easier to swallow when it's portrayed in a movie or told through a story or a spoken word poem or a song, right? Where you can kind of feel someone's emotions and even rage and sadness.
Yes.
So I think that's very beautiful that you bridge that and also allow people to embody that. And, you know, experiencing that type of, you know, racial bias at such a young age. You were 17 when the bus moment happened, right?
Yeah.
How do you define, and I think, you know, this conversation, I'm going to invite you to define some terms, because I think a lot of people don't, you know, understand the context. And so I just want to make sure that that is clear before we dive into some of the stories and explanations. So if I ask you to define something, if that's okay, just to kind of give people an overview of what we're diving into, but how do you define racial bias, especially as we're looking at conflict resolution?
So for me, racial bias is when you favor or you are against a particular racial group. And one of the things that I have to say about that is, now I'm teaching a particular group of people. Actually, I'm teaching a particular group of white people who asked if I would put together this particular group on race and racism in the United States. And one of the things that we talk about is that race itself is a construct. So it's not about biology. It's really about systems and how things are designed so that one racial group is seen as superior and others are seen as less than. So in this country, we tend to define it by skin color. So for me, racial bias is really, like I said, you either favor or you're against a particular group based really on skin color. And we call it race.
And I think a big thing that comes up a lot, especially in the workplace, and I know that this is the work that you do, working with high achieving corporate and entrepreneur leaders, and, you know, being able to help them take on that conflict in a powerful, productive, and professional way. And I feel what I've observed in my own client work too, is there's, and in myself, is that there's also just unconscious bias. So can you tell me a little bit more about that, or maybe even a specific moment to kind of help illustrate how this happens and how we can shift and change this?
Yeah. So unconscious bias is things that we are really not aware of. So unconscious bias starts in the brain, number one. I think that that's really important for people to understand, is that it's actually biological, because our brain is designed, there's a part of our brain that's designed to protect us, right? And so one of the ways that it protects us is by developing bias so that we can quickly categorize things, because we have, oh my goodness, millions of pieces of information that are thrown at us on any given day. And the brain just really can't process all of that deeply. So it has to develop systems in order for us to have shortcuts to things. So bias is one of those systems. So bias in itself isn't necessarily bad, but what happens is that when we are not able to check ourselves, when we're not able to put systems in place so that we're catching ourselves when we're using bias in the negative, then we tend to do things like stereotype people. So we can look at a picture, let's say, of someone. So if we were to look at a picture and it reminded us of what this country sees as a terrorist, and there are certain groups of people that tend to look like that in terms of the stereotype, not in terms of who they are, our brain will quickly bias that and say, you know, the terrorist, as opposed to us being able to say, wait a minute, I don't even know anything about this person. And so I can't judge them on the way that they look. I have to get to know them and see who they are and decide who they are and get their name and have a conversation. And if I can't do that, then I at least can't lump them into a group based on the way that we bias each other here, because each group has a particular bias that's associated with them, right? I mean, if we look in this country in particular, unfortunately, Black men are often stereotyped as the negative, someone who might do harm to you. It's not true, but it is the way that the stereotype is promoted in this country. So unconscious bias goes there without us thinking, right? As a way to categorize people. And if we really are going to check unconscious bias, we have to be aware of what biases are and how they come up for us. And then we also have to get to know people. So you talk about your work, right? How we work in love. Well, if we work in love, love, then our first thought is, how do I get to know people? How do I get to know their story? Because I do believe in that saying that a stranger or your enemy is just someone whose story you don't know yet, because we all have stories.
Yeah. So speaking of love, what does leading with love mean to you? And how do you put love into practice in your business and the work that you do in the world?
Yeah. So leading with love for me is, I think it's a practice. It's a way of thinking for me, because conflict is often so negative for people. It can do a lot of damage because we don't do it well. I don't think there's anywhere that does it well. And certainly many of us are learning to do it better. And so for me, I have to lead with love. I have to say that I'm going to think the better of you regardless, because in order for me to get my message across, in order for me to offer the invitation and hope that you accept the invitation to learn more about conflict and how to do it better and to do work with me, I have to believe that no matter what you're showing me, that you are capable of doing that, of learning to do it differently, and that there are reasons behind why you are acting the way that you do or reacting the way that you do. And that if I allow the opportunity for you to share those reasons with me, then I'll see into your heart and I'll know that, yeah, we can do this. We can do conflict in a different way. And so for me, that's my work. That's where I come from. I think that's one of the greatest compliments that I have gotten from people that have worked with me, is that I can help them take on difficult topics, and I can help them talk about how maybe they behaved really badly in a conflict. And I can hold that in love and say, we're human and we are not going to do it all well, but we can learn how to do it differently, and we can learn to forgive ourselves and one another when we don't do it well.
Is there a specific moment for you where you had a difficult time really coming from that loving place, right? Where you're like, I don't know your intentions in your heart. Like, is there a moment?
Well, I'm a mother. So, you know, anytime you come at my kids, the first instinct is, what? Don't come for my kids. And so I know that there have been, you know, my youngest son was terribly bullied, and it took everything in me to have conversations. But number one, these are kids. So it's hard for me to have a conversation with a child, with a kid, even, you know, a teenager, from the space that I might have one with an adult that I was angry at, because these are kids. As bad as their behavior might be, there's so much room for growth. And that's when we make a lot of our mistakes, is during childhood and teenage years, adolescence. So, but there have been times when I've wanted to come at them as an adult because of the pain that they cause for my child. But I can tell you one thing that I remember specifically on the adult level, and that is when I was doing my Soul of Conflict Summit, I was doing interviews with people who I considered were doing real work around conflict in different areas. And I came across a gentleman named Daryl Davis, who was the only African American who ever infiltrated the Ku Klux Klan. And he actually made friends with at least 21 Klan's members. And they actually, through his friendship and just growing more, gave up being in the Klan and turned over their uniforms to him. And I thought, oh, no, I can't go that far. I could never extend the kind of love. And so I wanted to interview him. And I did. And after I interviewed him, I had a million questions, but I also felt the shift in my heart. And I thought, if that is what I felt I was called to do, I could still do that in love. It might be the hardest thing I've ever done, But if I really felt that I was supposed to do it, then I would absolutely extend it in love. But I did not think I could at all. Like, that was my boundary. I haven't been called to do it yet, so I don't know if I truly can walk that walk all the way through. But yeah, that was absolutely a thing that I said, there's absolutely no way I'm talking to anybody from the Klan. Why?
Right, right. And I think that there, what I love that you shared was about believing that someone is capable, mm-hmm. you know, of growing and sharing more of their story to get insights of why their brain is wired and making a certain decision. You also talked about, you know, as leaders, like checking ourselves, right? And where that unconscious bias may lie, and just, you know, taking a moment to pause. Is there specific tools or strategies that you walk your clients through to kind of start to practice that awareness? Because I've, like you said, it's like, it's in our brains and it's almost an automatic response. So how do we unpack those pieces to start to dissolve some of that bias?
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's interesting how connected we are in terms of mechanisms these days, but how disconnected we are in terms of relationships and really getting to know one another. And so one of the things that I always do that disappoints everyone in the beginning, but they love it afterwards, is most people come to me and they want me to fix the other person that they're in conflict with. And that's what they're here for. It's tell them they're wrong, fix them. And I say, absolutely. And you know where we're going to start? We're going to start with you. And they're just like, are you kidding? But it's the perfect place to start. Because first of all, number one, the only person that you can control in conflict is you. That's it. You cannot control anyone else. You can use techniques and you can use them with skill level. And in many times, in many conflicts, you're able to be successful, but you really cannot control anyone but you. So the first thing that I do is to help people to look at how they view conflict and where they even got those views. Because I believe that our view on conflict, most of us have a negative view about it. For instance, if I ask you or anyone else, what are the first thoughts that come up for you when I say the word conflict or when you think of conflict, most people are not going to say it's a growth opportunity. It's a perfect way to get to know me better. It's an opportunity for me to get some insight on my emotions. Like, those aren't things that come up for people. For the most part, it may be arguments and disagreements and I want to avoid it or I hate it. But the real deep growth parts are not what people talk about. So I want people to understand where that even came from for them. So it's constructed in childhood by the people who raised us. If it's multiple people, then multiple perspectives were given to us and ultimately ingrained in us. And I want people to start there so that they understand that they never come to a conflict clean, that they come first of all with whatever is constructed for them. Even if they've done work on it, it finds a way to creep in and pop up. So I want people to be aware to, first of all, in any conflict situation, the first place you look is within yourself. So start with you, because what you're going to have to do next is you're going to have to listen more deeply with the goal to understand what the other person is saying. And in order for you to do that, you've got to get you out of the way. And so you have to look within, know what you're thinking, know what you're feeling, and know what those feelings create within you, because our feelings really can trigger us and they trigger reactions. And we have to really be aware of what's happening to us within this conflict situation in order to put some real techniques in place that will help us to manage what's coming up within us, and then be able to really listen deeply and fully. So you can see, most of us may go into listening in conflict situation and we don't do it well. We listen up to the place at which we can interrupt the person so we can tell them how right we are.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, there's so much work, and that work is within ourselves. So that's how I get people to really start paying attention. You've got to start with you. You've got to do that inner work, and you've got to do it often enough that it becomes second nature anytime that you're in a conflict. And sometimes we catch it before we start to engage, and sometimes we're like mid in and we realize, oh my goodness, like I'm really not managing myself well here. I'm really saying and doing things that I don't want to be saying and doing, or that are making this worse. And if you can catch it then too, it's all good. And some of us catch it when it's all over. And then I say, well, then go back and try to fix it, right? Mm-hmm. I'm always an advocate for that. It's like, it's not too late. Go back and try to fix it. And let's try to get some tools in here so that you can do that. And then some of us need someone else to point it out.
And I can see, you know, a lot of like resistance and avoidance that happens in that process. What have you seen from like a time perspective of when people, you know, because I've experienced where clients, you know, if they're working in a team with one another and they're like, they can share all the things in a private conversation, but not actually deal direct, right? And have like a direct conversation with that person. They're like, oh, but let me tell you all the things. And what is like the timeline and process that you see for people who don't feel that sense of psychological safety to move forward in a more difficult conversation?
Yeah. So if there are, because psychological safety is so critical when you're talking about in a workplace situation, people who do not feel safe to say, to let's just say it's someone who supervises you. That's a really difficult situation, because anytime power is involved, you have to really feel safe. But even if it's a coworker and you're not sure if this is going to be a confidential conversation, or if this coworker is going to go and talk about you badly behind your back, then one of the things that for me is really important is to be able to have a conversation that isn't about the conflict first. Like, how are we doing? Are we having any conversation at all? Because that is, it's going to take time to work up to the place of being able to have a conversation about the conflict. And so if you're really going to have that conversation, to have to come right out with that, as opposed to being able to see if there's any way to just have a conversation, just a light, you know, how are things going? What's happening in each other's lives? Can we go there first? Can we at least spend a few minutes doing that? And then maybe next day, see if you can go a little bit further. That those kinds of conversations where you're not sure if there is real safety there, or if you're hesitant, those kinds of conversations are over a period of time. That's not if you and I are working together and we've had a relationship, whether it be really good or just we've just been able to at least have be cordial to one another. That's very different. And I feel like I can say, oh, I really want to talk with you about something that happened between us yesterday. I can come right out and say that without anything before that conversation. But if that's not where I'm at, then I would say you're going to want to try to build some kind of conversation where we're talking about lighter things before I ask the question, can I talk about something that happened between us the other day? And then I think you got to sit back and you've got to observe and see how that sits with them. Are they exploding right off the top? That's unsafe. right? And so I may not want to continue to have that conversation. Or if I do, I may not speak about everything that I want to speak about in that one sitting. I may try to put one thing out there and see if we might be able to talk through that particular piece of what's going on between us.
Yeah, I love that invitation to kind of like, one, just be aware, are you having any conversations at all and going from nothing to like, and right. all of this versus let's just like dip our toe in a little bit and see where the connection yeah. points do exist. Where is there some neutrality? Mm-hmm. And something that my husband and I do that we learned from our couples therapist is low withholds. So, you know, on a daily, every other daily basis, because my husband is someone who, you know, he's all good, easygoing, but he's building up little evidence along the way. And then it blows up off of something like, do you want something from Target? And I give him a list and he's like, and I'm just like, what happened? And so, you know, we've come up where it's like, you're releasing the valve, the steam, mm-hmm. and little mm-hmm. small pieces versus mm-hmm. waiting for the explosion to happen. And so it's just right. like checking in of like, hey, is there anything going on? Like just the small little triggers yeah. instead of holding them all in until you yes. explode of like, so I could see that also being applied in the workplace too, yes. right? Of being able to just check in on like, hey, how's everything going? Especially if you see consistency in that blow up moment where someone is, you know, outpouring maybe even something from their own personal lives. Like I had a moment with my daughter today where I was, you know, prepping some stuff and like I wasn't doing my typical morning where it felt very spacious and slow. She was asking for help. And then I was just like, I felt short and I felt that in me. And there's a part where I couldn't control the impulse. But like 5 minutes later, I was like, oh, can you come here? Like, I'm so sorry. And here's what was going on for me. Like, it had nothing to do with you, but yeah. I was taking it out on you. So just being able to also just be aware of how we interact. And I think it's very powerful for us to also like apologize to our yeah. children and like, I messed up. I'm not perfect.
Yeah.
And what could I do differently? You know, how can we, you know, try to avoid this type of thing happening in the future?
Yes. And people think, you know, oh, you're the conflict closer and there's no conflict in your home. There's absolutely conflict. And in fact, my youngest, who's now 18, my gosh, but our conflicts were so wonderful in terms of the kinds of conversations we were able to have. And I do believe that it is exactly because of what you just said, is that I'm constantly looking at, well, how did I do in that situation? And if I know that I didn't do well, I always will come back to my child and say, I am really sorry. And I will say, what was happening? Exactly what you did. Listen, I'm really tired. I can remember one time yelling at my oldest son. He was 5 at the time and my niece was 6. We were traveling from Philadelphia and I don't like to drive. If it's 30 minutes, I call it a long drive. And Philadelphia is 2 hours. And I'm like, oh, this is a long trip. And it was getting late and they wanted to hang around in McDonald's and, you know, they're very close and they were just chatting and laughing. And I just was like, come on, come on. And I realized, because they were so hurt by my saying, you know, listen, I'm sorry I brought you. That's what I said. I'm sorry I brought you right now because I really need to get home. And I said to them, look, I'm tired. It's late. It's dark. I don't like to drive in the dark. And then it's getting ready to rain. And so all of those things made me actually afraid. And so the fear turned into being impatient and angry with you. And that's not what it is. I'm happy you're here. But it's that kind of thing that was, my kids got that all throughout their upbringing because I was never afraid to check myself and then come back and model for them that, you know, you don't always make it. So apologize, try to tap into why, explain what do you think was the cause of it, and hope that they will accept your apology.
Yeah. And I love how you kind of unpacked like the circumstances are, it was like, it really had nothing to do with you. It had to do with it's dark. It's this, it's, you know, we start to unpack and like, and then I felt afraid. And yeah. I think it's very powerful to model that for our children and also an opportunity for leaders in the workplace to model yeah. that. So yeah. would be some like a way for someone if they do lose it, right, in the workplace? And and let's say that they're in a power position, right? So what would be an example of how a leader who loses it can create an opportunity for repair?
Yeah, that's beautiful, because it's happened to me certainly, and it's happened to my clients. So for instance, maybe there's that one person who you manage who is the one that's constantly questioning and constantly coming up with reasons why that's not going to work, or, you know, you don't understand how much stress you're putting on us. And then one of my clients, for instance, I'm really tired of all of this resistance, like just get it done, and then storms out. And so if that's the situation, you can only imagine the effect that it has on the people that work with you for you, but I really say with you.
Yeah.
Because we should be working with each other, even if we're managing people. And so I always say pause. You've got to insert pause, especially after an explosion, but after any conflict, I want people to pause. Give yourself some time, first of all, to breathe. You've got to practice really deep belly breathing, just being able to connect to what's happening within you and being able to bring yourself to a place where you can be much calmer than you just were. And then to really just reflect, was that my best solution? Like, yes, in the moment, I know what I was feeling, like, and be in touch with that. What was I feeling? Aggravated, annoyed, maybe even threatened. Like, really touch on that. I was feeling threatened. I was feeling harassed. I was feeling undervalued. Those are things that you want to connect with. So connect to that and really be able to think about, what was this about? And as soon as possible, if maybe they all went out to lunch, then the minute they come back, make yourself available. But if they're still there, then turn right around and make yourself available to say, hey, I did that wrong. Can you give me a minute to talk about what just happened and try to fix this? I think that that is just crucial. Everybody's not going to accept it at first. It's rare, especially the person who feels most attacked, right? They may need a moment. And I would say, give the invitation. I know that you may need a moment to hear what I've just said in the explanation, but please know that I am apologizing. I am very sorry. And that is not how I want things to go with us, right? And so laying it out there.
Yeah, it's such vulnerability, right? Especially if you are in a leadership position and you're like, I'm supposed to be the model. So let's just scoot that out under the rug. Nothing ever happened. Right, like, everyone look away.
Right. Or, hey guys, I got donuts for everybody. And we're really mad at you. So we're going to eat the donuts, but we're not forgiving you.
Right. So what would be an opportunity from someone who needs to, manage up, right? Where they're being managed by someone, and I know we're talking about psychological safety. So maybe even you defining that and how someone could create, like from a leadership position or vice versa, having to manage up and speak up to someone who's in a leadership position, how to start to have that conversation when it is more difficult.
Yeah. First of all, I think that people need to understand that good conflict resolution, good conflict engagement is all about communication and consistent, constant, respectful communication. That's really what it is. So if we are not communicating on a regular basis, we are not going to create the kind of safety where people feel safe to speak up, to come to work. There's that expression, bringing your whole self to work. People don't want to bring their whole selves to work if they're going to get chopped down. And so that's just a saying, if you don't create the kind of environment that actually allows for people to do that. And so communicating on a regular basis, I'm always surprised when I work with managers managers who don't meet regularly with their teams or with their coworkers or whoever that they're managing. That always surprises me because you cannot really understand what's going on if there's not enough face-to-face or whether it's by video, if people are working remotely. But to come together on a regular enough basis, if you can't do it once a week, then twice a month, but something where people have the opportunity to, number one, do something like a check-in or go around. How are things really? Like, not how are you doing? You know how we say, how are you? Oh, I'm fine. Oh, I hate that. Because we're not fine, at least not every day, right? Come on, people. Somebody say, I'm lousy today. You know, I'm really sad today. Something. But an opportunity for people to check in, and then to set the stage for how communication is going to go here. And I don't mean that whole top-down thing, like, you know, the buck stops here. I mean, here's how we can really gain each other's respect. Here's what we want to do in terms of the way that we want to speak to one another. Here's what we want to do when conflict arises between us, so that you're really setting the foundation for a community that communicates regularly, so that when difficult conversations come up, you have the structure and the space to have those conversations. They don't come out of nowhere. They come out of the whole foundation of, this is what we do here. We talk about the small stuff, and we talk about the big stuff, and we talk about the hard stuff, and we talk about the easy stuff. But the main thing is that we talk with one another. That's the main thing.
Yes, I love that so much. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of connection and conversation, but it's one of the things that most of the founders that I work with don't have consistent team meetings. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just schedule that once a week. This is a set time. We connect, because it's that. And I was like, even if you think you have nothing, because I will also see that with clients, you know, where they have their employees where they're like, you know, that's the first thing to go.
Yeah.
is a stand-up meeting. Like, we're busy. We don't have time to talk and connect and update one another. Yeah. And a lot of my clients see the upside and benefit of just, you know, having a, I've worked with people who are co-founders, right? And they're not having consistent meetings. I'm like, you need a founders meeting every week. Yes. Where you're just going through, you know, and sometimes it is small and the little things, but it's a safe, consistent container. Yep. For those bigger conversations. Or as long as you have that weekly thing in, then it's easier to schedule, like, oh, can we add on an extra 30 mm-hmm. minutes so we can talk about mm-hmm. this and moving that. So I just love your call for people to be more consistent in their communication rituals.
Yes. Yes, because, you know, there's so many ways to communicate now that people really think they're communicating in all those ways. And they're not. I mean, email is for, it's not for a difficult conversation. It's not to iron out things.
It's a task list. It's like, do this, do that. And we know even in marriage and relationships, we don't want our relationship to just be based on do this, do that, buy this from Target, whatever it is, right? Just like, that's not a true relationship of connection and communication. So with that, like you were mentioning, kind of bringing in that, this is how we communicate, this is what happens in conflict. How would a founder of a company who hasn't had the consistent communication pieces in practice and has been having those moments of the emotional flare-ups and conflicts that arise, how do you basically initiate a new way of being inside a company?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first of all, you own that you haven't done it. I think that that is key, and that it's important that you haven't done it, and that was a mistake. That's the first thing that I have people do. It's, look, hey, we hit the road running and we were doing okay. And now I can see that this was something that we should have been doing all along. And here's why. Here are the problems that are coming up. And so let's rewind and let's go to, this is going to be our new norm. And recognizing that for some people, that new norm is a pain in the neck because they've gotten used to just going forward and not dealing with things. But also, the more committed you are to doing it, no matter what it takes to do it, the more people will then drop into, well, great, I at least have this space where I can share these things. And so we are trying to deal with some of these things. And it may be very difficult at first because there's probably a pile up of things and you're going to have to really work your way through those things a little bit at a time. But once you're able to consistently have this space where you're talking to one another and then putting the conflicts in that space and working them through and talking them through, then the change itself is going to move everybody forward because everyone's really going to see the difference and feel that safety within it. But if you're coming to me as a founder and this is a mistake that you've made, then you've got to, the first thing I'm going to tell you, you've got to be willing to own it and own it in a way that says, hey, you know, I get it. I thought we were doing great and we're not in the way that I would like. And so I really want us to do that. That's the other piece. I'm owning it because I want us to do it differently so that we can all have the kind of work environment that makes us feel happy, safe, creative, wanting to be here, connected to one another, and know that we're all in this together.
Yeah. And you wrote an article about on Psychology Today, the sandwich conflict process, which is easier to chew. You talked about like the elderly parents, you know, address the fear of what if, enlisting help, expect opposition, and schedule in me time. Yes. Which I think everything, you know, it's like a parallel for everything in our lives. Like, yes. I think that a conversation in our home or in the workplace, that it all crosses over.
Yes, it absolutely does. And I actually want to emphasize the last one, the me time, because I do not think those of us who do me time, a lot of us don't do it well. And so the me time actually becomes the opportunity to think about everybody else's problems that we really want to fix or help out with. And so I really want people to recognize that me time actually means, number one, taking good care of yourself. I think that that's really important. And so if it's 10 minutes a day of doing something that actually assists in nurturing you, we've got to do that. And many times people don't make the connection to that in conflict, because I've written a few articles about self-care and conflict because it is really something that people do not associate and connect with one another. So that's one thing that I want people to really understand, is that you have to take good care of yourself in order to be able to engage in the kinds of conversations that are required when you're talking about conflict.
So I love that.
Do you? Yeah. That was one that was extremely popular with people. We don't normally make the connection of that.
Yeah. And also just like being fully resourced when we're at capacity, there's no way that we can like defuse a situation. It's like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm this. Like
that's
our
right.
Body, our personal needs are not going to be taken care of. So the awareness to connect and like make sure someone else on the other side is okay and didn't get hurt in the process, or, you know, there's not that space. So I love that you are linking self-care to conflict resolution. I think that's really powerful. And I know you have a book called Closing Conflict for Leaders.
Yes.
How to Be a Bold Leader and Develop a Kick-Ass, High-Functioning, Happy AF Team. What in there would you say is one of the biggest takeaways or strategies in that book that someone could implement today?
I would say that there's a few that I work with, but here's I think one of the biggest things is I work with a format where I'm having you to really look at things like resolving conflicts, right? And being objective in conflicts. And I think that the objectivity is one that a lot of people really do not take time to do. So what I say about that is anytime that you're in a conflict, skilled, unskilled, however you choose to deal with it, because you're going to deal with it at the time. That's number one. First of all, engage. I think it's important to engage. Many people are avoiders. More of us are avoiders than not. Close to 70% of people are avoid conflict. We just don't like it, don't want to have anything to do with it. And so, as you said, it piles up. So the first thing that I would say is that you want to make the commitment to engage. But if that is scary for you, that when a conflict happens right then, that you make the commitment to engage, whatever you do in the conflict situation, I want you at the end of it to come back and to objectively look at what it is that you did, how you handled it, and what it is that you could do better or would want to do better the next time. Not what the other person did, not what you want them to do, but what you feel like you could do better. And it might be something like, I'm just not good at this. I need to ask for help. I need to get help in this situation. Or it might be something like, I really didn't listen to them. I interrupted them constantly, or I defended rather than really listen to see if they had some good points about the way that I was handling things or the way that I maybe manage or speak to people, that you really take the time to go through that. And if you can't be objective, then have the courage to ask some people who've witnessed you in a conflict situations, ask them, how do they see you in conflict? How do they see you managing conflict? Because it's important to get feedback both from yourself and from other people, because we never see ourselves the way that we really are. Even when we do it well, we don't see it from somebody else's perspective. And it's really important to get other people's perspectives, because that's really one of the things that makes conflict, is that we all can see the same situation from very different perspectives. And the reasons why is because we carry our stories with it. Like I said, we don't come clean the conflict. So I may carry my story about something that might have happened to me in the past in a conflict, and you might remind me of that person, or what you did might remind me of that situation. And then consciously or unconsciously, I am actually acting out that particular conflict with you. And it may really not have anything to do with what's happened between us a few minutes ago or yesterday or last week.
Oh, that's so good. I'm just like, preach. Yes. Because it's so true. You know, my husband and I even got to this place where he's like, oh, I know that was your younger self, your 16-year-old self in that conversation. I understand, you know, but it's like, you do have to do that deep inner work and self-awareness. Yeah. But I love this addition in, you know, committing to engaging, but also not just self-awareness for yourself, where you're looking at things objectively, but getting outside perspective from others of like, well, how do you see me engaging in conflict? And just being able to kind of put the pieces of the picture together. We are only seeing it from one angle. So we're like trying to complete the puzzle. So yeah, I really, really love that. And it's deep work. You know, I know you're in the mess of it, you know, and we don't get taught this stuff as kids, as adults, of how to be human with each other when things are hard and challenging. Like when things are easy, we're good, but we need tools for when things are hard, and not just hard between two people, but it's like, oh, things are hard for me in my own life, and I don't have all the tools or to be fully resourced to actually show up for this conversation.
It's absolutely true. And I can tell you that with my son, my 18-year-old Naeem, I will ask him sometimes once we've worked through a conflict, so what, how'd I do? Like, what could I have done better? Or what did I say that moved you? And he's able to really give me good feedback. I mean, and it's interesting because in the beginning of the conflict, he's yelling at me about how horrible I am, right? So to come through that, and at the end for him to actually be objective about, yes, mom, when you said this, that I really got, but when you said this, you know, you looked at me in this particular way and the tone really made me feel badly about myself. And that's good feedback for me because, to be honest, I've heard about my tone before. So if I really want to say that I'm working on getting better, then I have to address the tone thing because it keeps coming up.
That's so good because I know that for myself. I know, like, but to hear that, what would you say for especially women, right? Mm-hmm. Because even though we know we might not be doing well, we also don't want to hear feedback because we hear it as criticism instead of constructive and helpful. So is there a reframe or like how do we lean into really being open to receiving that feedback? Like what is it that we need to know or shift in our own mindset to be brave enough to even ask for it?
Yeah. So one of the things you have to shift is that I do a lot of work. The workshop that I do that I'm asked to do the most is how to create a healthy relationship with conflict. Because most of us have unhealthy relationship with conflict. So if you really want to create a healthy relationship with conflict, then what you want to do is be committed to inviting people to give you some feedback. So I would say don't make it open. Don't say, you know, so how'd I do, right? Pick something that you really want to be working on. I have been told that my tone can sometimes turn people off. I'd love feedback on my tone with you in this conversation, or if they witnessed you in conflict with someone else, so that it's something that you have decided you would like to work on and change. So it's not something just out of the blue or they're tearing you, they're ripping you to shreds. Like, oh, great. Been wanting to tell you, you do this wrong, you do that wrong. Oh, and one more thing. No, that you actually are committing yourself to work on something specific. Because if we're honest with ourselves, a lot of times the feedback that we get is consistent, right?
Yeah.
That you're yelled, you know, like you go from 0 to 100 real quick, right? So, okay, how many times do you need to hear that before you decide that you probably need to work on that?
Yeah, and I think there's also an opportunity, you know, also to acknowledge when someone's doing something the right way or a way that works for you, because so often we're constantly like tweaking, adjusting, improving, and like, oh, let's acknowledge what's already working so that we can see more of that. Like, oh, I really liked when you, you know, took the time to check in with me. Or even for me, I acknowledge my daughter. Like if she makes her bed and I caught her, I'm like, I'm going to catch you in that act. I noticed that you made the bed today and nobody asked you. So I think there's that opportunity as well to highlight what is working and what's good.
Yes. And as a manager, when you get that feedback, you never say this about, you never notice, then notice and say something. Like, don't just disregard that feedback that's given to you. You want to be able to say, okay, great, I did notice. You know, I noticed that this time you actually waited and let me finish my sentence, right? Because maybe you never did notice that before and they really wanted you to. Or I noticed that you really worked hard on this, whatever it is. But I tell managers all the time, really listen for the feedback they're giving you about what it is you're missing, like the opportunities you're missing to, as you say, catch them doing something well. Because we can focus really keenly on the negative things or the things that get on our nerves, and we miss the things that they did that actually showed that there's some growth for them.
Yeah. Oh, I could talk about this stuff with you for forever. But I know we need to close our conversation with the conflict closer. Is there anything else we haven't covered that you'd love to share before?
Yeah. So here's what I would love for people to do. Part of what happens in conflict is, as I said, we just don't listen well enough and deeply enough. I want us to listen to understand That's a very different kind of listening than, okay, so what's going on? Like, we'll ask that question and they'll say something and it'll trigger us, or we disagree with it, and so then we want to respond. I want us to practice listening to understand. So what that means is that you're going to ask whatever the question is that needs to be asked so that you can get the person talking. You're going to then give back to them what you've heard them say. So here's what I'm hearing, giving that back. And then you're going to check in, did I get that right? And ask for that feedback, right? Did I hear you correctly? Am I getting that right? Because we can't really address conflict well unless we know what we're addressing. And most of the time we miss the opportunity to reflect back, to be sure that what we heard is what they're saying and that that's what we should be talking about. And then, fourth thing, ask, please say more. Can you tell me more? Rather than jump right in to respond or react, I'm asking us to delay it, to actually keeping the focus on trying to listen to and understand the other person longer than we might normally do it. That way, we're not only learning to listen better, but we're getting more information about what the conflict is about from their perspective.
Oh, I love that so much. And I am implementing that in my home life, in the work life, because I think, especially if, you know, you're entrepreneurial or in a leadership position, we're problem solvers. You know, what we get paid for. But when we're with humans and we're connecting, we do have to slow it down, create some more space, and truly listen. And I love the listen to understand and the request to, like, tell me more. Like, how often does someone say, yep, you explained it, but you got even more speaking time? I know my, like, for kids, they're like, you're not hearing me, or like, I'm trying to explain, you know, it's like, you're just moving into, like, all right, got to get into parent mode. And like, here's a teaching moment. And, you know, all of those things versus like just giving someone space to really use their own voice and share their perspective and experience. I think that's a really powerful extra step into the process to also build our listening muscles, listening to understand muscles.
Absolutely. So if we all did that, right, we would really be making a difference in other people's lives. And it, ultimately, that means we'd be making a difference in our own lives.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that in politics, in family dynamics of like, oh, tell me more. Yeah. Even though inside I'm like, no.
I gotta tell you why I'm right.
So beautiful. Thank you, Lynn, for taking the time to just dive into this conversation. And if people want to learn more about your work, where can they find you?
They can find me at Lynn, with an E on the end, MaureenHurdle.com, LynnMaureenHurdle.com. If you want to reach out to me, it's Lynn at LynnMaureenHurdle.com. I love when I've put myself out there and people have been listening, taking the time to listen. Thank you for doing that. And when people have questions, reach out. It's fine. I love that, because I love questions.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. Yes. And I'll definitely link to those in the show notes as well. So have a beautiful day.
Thank you. You too. And thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for your heart and attention and listening to Lead with Love. You can always get the links and resources mentioned in each episode over at leadwithlovepodcast.com so that you can build a sustainable business and live a creative life on your terms. If this message, leading with love, resonates with you and you want to take a stand for remembering that there are humans with beating hearts behind the numbers, I would love for you to subscribe so you never miss an episode and leave an honest review. It would mean the world to me, and it also helps more people spread more love in the world, which we really, really need. I also love hearing from you. So as you're listening, take a screenshot, share your favorite takeaway, and tag me on Instagram and Facebook at Jada Selner. I really appreciate you, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.